Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
All right, take a mania time. We do it every Friday at 9 o'clock. The worst takes of the week compete for the title. This is something we've been doing since February. We've had many a worthy champ. None more worthy than our good friend, John McClain, who said this on Area 45 the day that the Texans agreed to terms with cornerback, controversial cornerback, Damon Arnett.
I think Damon Arnett's the worst signing in his franchise's history. How they have lowered themselves to sign a guy like this, who's, and they said, well, he deserves a second chance. No, he's had a second chance with the Chiefs, with the Dolphins. The Raiders cut him. You know, when the Raiders cut players, you got to be bad.
Okay, so we don't need to re-adjudicate.
The worst signing in Texans history is what did it. For a guy that ended up, as we suspected, he got 1 year minimum. It's is very much just get him in the building and see if, hey, says he's changed his life in the last year. He did a year in the UFL without any hiccups that we know of. And they see what happens. And that it's very, very easy to walk away from if it doesn't work out. So there's not a chance in hell this can be the worst signing in Texans history, unless something catastrophic happens while he's in the building or
right,
something.
Right, right, and it's his fault.
Then it could become the worst. But other than that, it's, hey, doing what the Texans have done multiple times before. Here's a guy who was a first-round pick at cornerback. It's really hard to find guys with those physical skill sets, so let's just take a swing at him and see how it works out.
Yep.
I would say odds, I'm guessing the odds are that he doesn't make the team.
Yeah.
But the upside is that, hey, no, actually, you know what? He cleaned himself up, and he's actually incredible.
Yeah.
So there you go.
Yeah, he's got
very low. I love almost zero risk with potentially high reward.
I agree.
That's fine by me.
We're simpatico on that. I disagree with John that it's the worst signing ever. I don't even think it's a bad signing. So let's get to the contenders here. We've got a few of them. Speaking of, well, this is kind of one that's got some similarities. The Texans getting a guy in the building.
Yeah.
They did this with Diontae Johnson last year, wide receiver. Didn't last long. He was here for only a few weeks, got let go after the win over the Chargers in the playoffs. Only played a couple of games, had a few catches, wasn't here for very long. This particular cut has nothing to do with the Texans. This is from his time in Baltimore. This is Diontae Johnson talking about the incident that got him cut from Baltimore, where he was active, he was in uniform, but refused to go into a game in the second half.
I wasn't getting into, like, no run plays, no, like, passing plays, no nothing.
Wasn't it cold as you said?
Yeah, it was cold. So I'm on the sideline, just standing there, like, just going to the heater back and forth, like, just waiting to hear my name called.
Yeah.
So end of third, going into the fourth or whatever. They're like, Tay, we need you. I'm like, nah, I don't think it's a, to me, I'm thinking, I don't think it's a good idea for me. Like, cause like I was thinking about like my legs, I'm already, I don't want to go out there and put bad stuff on film.
Right, right.
And it's not like I didn't want to go in the game, but you got to think like leading up to this point, I done been through so much. And
like you said, man, you were kind of checked out.
Yeah, I checked out mentally. I was like, whatever happens, happens. Like, I was just rolling with the punches at that time. So I told him I wasn't going in. I was like, I understand what you're saying, like, but I'm not going to go in. So I just sat on the bench. And then that's when they suspended me.
Okay.
The part there at the end where it almost sounds like they suspended me.
Yeah.
Like it was surprising or something that he would get suspended after refusing to do his job.
Yes. Yeah. The part that got me, because we played this three times now. We played it twice yesterday. We played this is like an episode of The Sopranos where you're noticing things that you didn't notice the first watch. The part where he's like, all that I had been through. I'm like, what exactly had you been through? Like, what had you been through that wasn't self-inflicted here? Like,
you've been on multiple teams now, and you've been on three teams in the last 12 months because I'm guessing this stuff like this. Yeah.
The whole thing where teams keep giving you opportunities to get a paycheck in the NFL, it's got to be brutal.
I'd been through a lot, including my forthcoming unwillingness to go through to actually play. The only thing that rescues him is that he never referred to himself in the third person.
Okay.
If he had said at some point, yes, you know, Diontae don't play that game, man.
He'd be the winner.
Like, you're talking to Diontae Johnson here, and Diontae isn't going in unless everything is just perfect.
Okay.
So no, McClain's is still worse.
McClain kicks
than
out.
How do you do it, Connor?
Oh, McClain throws Deontay Johnson off of him. All right, let's get to the next one. Here was Aaron Rodgers on the Pat McAfee Show, a nationally syndicated show.
That he's going on voluntarily.
Every
in the
week.
Yes.
During the season, every week. Yeah. Going on voluntarily. Telling people to keep his private life private, y'all.
And where are we at in society where that's like the norm now? That just because I'm not selling wedding photos to the magazines or leaking personal information or making a loving post on Instagram. And look, you want to do that? That's fine. That's your own prerogative. I don't care. That's just not what I want to do. I don't want to be a part of anything. I told you, when this is all done, I'm out. You won't see me. And I know that I've chosen to be in the public eye for one more season. But my private life is staying private. And any other ridiculous story that's out there about my family that I don't talk to, you know, they wouldn't know any information about me. Like, leave them alone. Like, and you want to keep stalking me on the beach and getting photos of me and Apollo? Go for it. I don't give a shit, but stop making shit up. And my private life is my private life, and it's going to stay that way. And I'm with somebody who wants to be private. And if and when she wants to be out and there's a picture, she'll choose that. And she deserves the right to that. But the entitlement to information about my private life is so f***ing ridiculous and embarrassing. Like, hey, do what you got to do, but just... You know, try and leave me out of a conversation, sports world, for a month. Try and just leave me out, my personal life, my professional life. Try not to talk about me. Try not to still be relevant for the next 6 weeks, 5 weeks, whatever it is. Just see if you can do that.
Okay.
Just see if you can do that. As I'm appearing on one of the biggest shows all of sports media.
Yeah.
Yes. Oh, he's such a victim.
Yeah.
Poor Aaron Rodgers. My favorite thing about Aaron Rodgers the last couple of years has been his transformation of a 40-year-old guy who's noticing things about the world, as it's been for a long time. But to him, it's just this steep and very just powerful observation that he's made. Is like, hey, did you notice that people are digging into the private lives of celebrities? What have we come to in this world? Like,
when did you
go to the grocery store with your mom when you were a kid?
Right.
Like, you've never seen a tabloid or what have you?
Oh my God.
He walks around in constant amazement that things are pretty much the same way they've always been. Yes, there's a lot of new stuff that's super weird and everything.
Yeah.
Including, like, him showing up on social media or on the Pat McAfee Show or anything else and then demanding privacy afterwards.
Is it?
Yeah.
I mean, it is somewhat miraculous. Unless she doesn't exist and it's a Manti Te'o situation, it is a minor miracle that we don't know what she looks like, right?
No, if anything, for Rodgers, that's where he doesn't realize how much he's whining compared to people that are actual Hollywood celebrities
or what have you.
The amount of digging that they would have done into somebody like, you know, Jay-Z or somebody like that, a lot more would have actually been known, and a lot more false stuff is written about those people, too.
No doubt.
Like the actual bona fide, you know, crossing the sports world celebrities.
Yep.
So he's got pretty relatively light treatment. But, for a guy that's been on the podcast circuit and dipped his toe into political waters to act like, oh, I can't believe people are talking about me.
Where are we on this? Does it beat McClain? That's the question.
Yeah, it beats McClain.
It beats McClain. He got a new champ. He can do his little discount double check and everything. Yeah.
And this is why. This is because self-awareness.
Yeah.
I think McClain a little bit knew. Like, he's just going to speak hyperbolically about it or what have you. Whereas Aaron Rodgers, it's deep within him that he's being victimized at every turn.
This might stick for a while. We'll see if it sticks even through this segment, though. We've got two more left. So, Aaron Rodgers, new champion. Just pin John McClain 1-2-3 in the middle of the ring. All right, Stephen A. Smith, I don't think we've played this one yet on the show this week. I'm pretty sure we haven't. We've talked about it. This was Stephen A. Smith talking about Kyrie Irving. Kyrie Irving, they did away with his option for next year. The Maverick, I forget if it was a player or a team option. They ripped that up, and they give him a three-year, $119 million contract, nearly $40 million a year. For Kyrie Irving, who's coming off a torn ACL, Stephen A. Smith is hopping mad that he only got $40 million.
But let me say something further. I think Kyrie Irving got lowballed. I think he deserved more. This Kyrie Irving we're talking about here. What happened to him? He got injured. He got injured. And so for me, I'm going like this in today's NBA economy where you got cats getting paid 55, 60 million plus. You couldn't give this guy at least the 43 to 45 a year. Remember, he was supposed to get the player. The player option would have given him 43 million. Mm-hmm. So to me, at 119 million, forgive my math, but I think I'm pretty good at stuff like that when it comes to contracts. I think I know a little thing or two about it. The brother got 119 million. That is a fraction less than 40 million per. Kyrie Irving deserves more than that.
Let me present my feelings with this to you. You're ultimately the judge and jury on this, Seth, but the things that annoy me, but that the reason this cut made it into Take a Mania, one is that this is one of the least relatable topics ever. An on-air personality who makes $20 million a year bitching and moaning about a basketball player only getting 40 instead of 43 or 44.
Yeah.
Like, who cares? Like, literally, well,
no,
who cares?
And also just acting like Kyrie Irving has somehow no say in the matter or something.
Right.
Like, he just stepped off the bus in Detroit.
Right.
And a shady record producer signed him to a 20-year deal. Yeah, like, no, Kyrie Irving's been in the league for over 15 years now.
And oh, by the way,
like, he knows full well what he's doing. He's like, he accepted the contract.
Yes, he accepted the contract. He's injured. He tore his ACL. These things happen. Like, sorry, I mean, it's bad luck. It happened. The other thing that bothers me is he did that thing where they're talking about big money contracts, and he took that little opportunity to remind us of how much money he makes. I know a little something about big contracts. You know, I think I can do the math. I know a little something about that. Like, that's Stephen A. reminding us that he just inked his 5 years, 100 mil a couple of months ago.
Yeah,
that's annoying.
To me, this is a bad take, but it's more like a bad take about something that I don't care about.
Yep.
The only reason I care about it is because of the bad take.
Right.
So I can't reward the bad taking that excessively
it's
by
like
making
Inception.
Yeah.
All right, so we get a kick out of here. I'm with you on that one.
Oh,
Aaron Rodgers is a worthy champ over that. All right, last one. We did play this one. Joy Taylor of FS1 was on the Joe Budden podcast and had this take on the dynamic between Caitlin Clark and Angel Reese.
The Magic Johnson, Larry Bird moment for the WNBA. Like, this is great. I'm a storyteller. I think storylines are so important. I think you need villains. I think you need heroes. Mm-hmm. You need to sell. You got to sell a fight. Like, brand all of this.
Mm-hmm.
And it upset white men to watch this strong, winning, unapologetic black woman be in their, you know, it be in Caitlin's face.
In their savior's face.
Yeah. And they still cling to it. And it's now like spun to this whole thing where like Caitlin's better than Angel and blah, blah, blah. I just said we would not be talking about Caitlin Clark the way that we do if it wasn't for that moment with Angel Reese. I will die on this hill. I will die on this hill.
I was with you until that.
I will die on this hill. I will die on this hill.
Joy.
I will fight this hill.
Joy, chill out.
Okay. Everybody piling on her at the end there is significant in this.
This
judgment.
Is. I've thought about this one because this is the key. This is where she saved herself, and I don't even think she meant this. She said we wouldn't be talking about this the way we are, or we wouldn't talk about Caitlin Clark the way we are if it weren't for the Angel Reese confrontation.
That incident.
It wasn't clear to me. She was talking about the most recent incident?
Yes. Yes.
All right.
Yes.
Yeah, because that's the whole thing. Like, yes, there is a with some like whatever percentage of the population of white dudes, yeah, there is that, obviously.
Right.
Like, as there is with anything. There's going to be people that like find a way to totally make it about race. So that does change the tone of the conversation, but the way she said it, it was like she was diminishing Caitlin Clark as a phenomenon that has brought like the little girls, the little girls that flock to these WNBA games are not caught up in the same social media world that Joy Taylor is.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, like she's brought so many more eyeballs. So to kind of try to diminish Caitlin Clark's impact as, oh no, just a byproduct of some subtle race war.
Yeah.
As the guys that were on the podcast with her knew, that's just completely bogus.
Well, or that this is what put Caitlin Clark really on the map and completely ignoring all the viewership, completely ignoring her college career. You know,
This
is where Caitlin Clark really got into the consciousness of the American sports watching public is just false.
She took a kernel of truth and blew it up into a gigantic race baiting bomb.
So where are we with her and Aaron Rodgers?
Who's the current champ?
Aaron Rodgers. Yes, two takes ago.
Oh boy, this is a tough one. Ever since the belt got unified, this has been difficult. You know, we used to have three separate champions in a given week. Yeah, I gotta go, and I'll give the panel that she was with there on that show probably put her over the top.
Yes,
into just how egregiously bad it was, and it also in trying to diminish Caitlin Clark as by bringing a social element into it.
Yes.
Yes, she is this week's
Joy
champion.
Taylor, this is the second time. Second time in a month that we've had multiple title changes in one segment. It happened earlier this month, too.
I was there for both.
This time of year?
You were there for both, huh, Colin? Yeah.
You would expect it this time of year.
Yeah.
This is when people start getting desperate. They see their online engagement going down and everything.
That's the best point you've made. You made good points today. That's your best one, that this is the time of year for bad hot takes.
Because the
traffic, the foot traffic through the store is a lot slower. Yeah.
I go through this every freaking day, man. As you look at what a lot of the talking heads in sports media and in political talk are really good at is that they genuinely don't care whether they're right or wrong or whether what they even believe in what they're saying.
Yeah.
They just know that if the ratings are good and the clicks are up, then I'm doing my job.
That's right.
And I just can't do it. I've got plenty of just normally bad organic takes.
Mm-hmm.
Same. But to really consciously put yourself up over the top, sometimes you just got to go right in and say, I know that I don't actually believe what I'm about to say, but I'm going to say it because I need the clicks, baby.
Absolutely.
I don't believe that Joy Taylor actually believes, even as she was saying, I believe this and I will defend this. I don't believe that she actually believes what she just
said. Maybe not, but that does not strip her of the belt. The take is out there and she is the champ. Maybe our first female champ too, I think. I'd have to go back and look at the lineage of the title. All right.
See, now, if I really wanted to do max engagement, what I would do is be sure it was a female every week.
Yeah.
And then there would be a think piece on it and on CNN or something. Look at these classic old bastards.
We would be the misogynistic radio show down in Houston.
Yes.
Yeah. There's money in them there hills. All right. Kevin Durant is a unicorn. And I'm going to tell you what, a unicorn in a situation that should actually scare the hell out of a few other teams in the league. I'll explain when we come back. Stay there.
Live from the Mokarem Injury Lawyers Studios, Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
This is something that should make Rocket fans happy, I guess, and probably makes other NBA fans right now a little nervous. Achilles tears have been a big, big topic this week because of Tyrese Halliburton tearing his Achilles in Game 7 of the NBA Finals. Obviously, Jason Tatum tore his earlier in the postseason, and that kind of torpedoed the Celtics' chances. There have been a record number of Achilles tears in the NBA this year, to the point where now Adam Silver's getting asked, what are they going to do about it? And he's having to talk about how we've got scientists looking at it, we've got AI looking at it, which turned into a lot of really funny Allen Iverson memes on social media of Allen Iverson looking at an X-ray of an Achilles. But it's a big topic in the NBA because it's more than they've ever seen. There's a graphic. This is a little scary if you're a fan of the Indiana Pacers or the Boston Celtics. And it's a number that is really kind of shocking and maybe scares you a little bit too if you're a Rockets fan expecting Kevin Durant to play a ton of games. Seth, they put up a graphic that had they had eight big names who've torn Achilles tendons over the last several years. Mm-hmm. Klay Thompson, Kevin Durant, Boogie Cousins, Brandon Jennings, Kobe Bryant, Chauncey Billups, Elton Brand, and then goes all the way back to Dominique Wilkins back when he tore his in the 90s. And the numbers are startling, man. Before these players tore their Achilles tendon, they averaged playing 71 games a year. After they tore their Achilles tendon, now keep in mind, some of these guys are still very young men when they tore it. They played an average of 47 games a year. Their number of games they played dropped by over a third. The average percentage drop in scoring by these players per game dropped by an average of 34%. The only player who actually improved his scoring after rupturing his Achilles, out of all these guys, Kevin Durant. Averaged 27 a game before. He's averaged nearly 28 a game since. Other than that, that's why I teased into this that Kevin Durant is a unicorn. Look at the two biggest things: durability and then productivity. And all these other big names all went down significantly. Kevin Durant's still scoring at a really high level.
I think the other thing there too is that half of them are guys who are 30 years old or older when they tore their Achilles, and just a classic old, I say old man injury in air quotes. It's in your 30s when you start, like, as a normal guy on the street, that's a, you know, your buddy that tore his Achilles playing pickup basketball at age 38. Yeah. And
I do.
So some of it is a little, okay, a lot of these guys, if you tear your Achilles when you're, you know, 34 years old, then yeah, your numbers are, you're probably not going to recover from it as well. That's the impressive thing about Durant, is he's one of the guys who tore it at age 30.
Yeah.
And his games played per season has gone down, partly because of the one big injury the one year. But the production going up is the really impressive part of it. And the fact that he's so many years removed from his Achilles tendon tear right now that I almost don't even factor it into it.
Yep.
That, okay, he's demonstrated that he's recovered from his Achilles tendon.
Right, it's not 1 year, and, you know, you're right. He tore the Achilles in 2019. You know, we're heading into 2026 soon enough here, so this would be, yeah, and you're right. Like, we have all these other players have red ink next to all their numbers, you know, because everything went down. The only thing that has green ink next to it is Kevin Durant's scoring average going up. That's really good for Rocket fans. I would be, you know, it's Celtic fans have probably had a chance to process the Jason Tatum thing a little bit. Pacer fans are still grieving over Tyrese Halliburton. It's only been a few days. This graphic would scare the living daylights out of me if I was a Celtics or a Pacers fan right now.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, I mean, and honestly, the thing that jumped out at me about this is because we talk a lot about, oh, they made so much progress with Achilles tendon tears, et cetera, et cetera. And usually it's in most situations in basketball and football, at least, it seems like, all right, no, guys come back faster, but you still have that drop off in performance, running backs especially, that it's still a big deal when you get it. It's really hard to come back from. That Durant had 552 days of recovery.
Yeah.
Compared to everybody else on here was like in 200s to 300s of days of recovery, where Kevin Durant had a full almost 2 years, or like a full year and a half to really get over it. And maybe that's the missing factor, is that we gotta stop being so impressed with how fast guys can come back from Achilles compared to the old days, and actually just give them a full year and a half to rest.
That's, I think, of all these guys in on this list, I think he's the only one that literally took a full season off to recover. Everybody else came back the next year at some point, it looks like, just based on the number of days.
Yeah.
And that was his first year in Brooklyn. Like, Brooklyn was perfectly okay with paying Kevin Durant a max salary to sit and rehab his Achilles injury. Yeah. You know, so
Klay Thompson had 414 days of recovery. So depending on what time of year it was,
he had multiple injuries too. He had an ACL in there somewhere.
It was the NBA Finals where they lost to the Raptors because he went up for that dunk. And then,
That's right. So he was probably out for the whole year the next year too. I would imagine. Yeah, I'll look it up. But this would be, doesn't scare me. We got the only guy who improved his scoring average on this graphic, so I'm totally cool with this. Oh yeah, Klay Thompson. Yeah, Klay didn't play for 2 years.
Yeah, yeah.
2019, 2020, and then he tore his ACL somewhere in there and didn't play again. So he was out for a couple of years, Klay was. And then he came back and won another NBA title in 2022. Good times.
So do you think the reason why KD is the only green on that chart is because of his playing style? Because a lot of these guys seem like their game is drive around driving.
Yeah, probably.
KD's a shooter.
He doesn't rely on explosiveness as much as some of these other guys do.
Exactly.
Like Kobe looked totally different after. I mean, Kobe was really old, but Kobe was like a complete shell of himself after the Achilles tears. So, Payne and Pendergast with you on a Friday. There's somebody on the text page, Seth, who's very happy that I'm going on vacation. A listener here.
Why?
I think he was listening earlier when I was talking about my Brian Abreu tweet that I said he was the worst pitcher with under a 2.5 ERA that I've ever seen. It was in the middle of while he was loading the bases in a really stressful game. And I admitted that I was out somewhere having a beverage while I tweeted that. don't think it was a tweet that like would get me fired or anything like that. It was just a strong opinion at the time. Mm-hmm. Sean drunk tweeting is not something to brag about. Looking forward to his vacation. As usual, the show gets better. Damn. Yeah, I know, that's harsh.
Thank you.
Yeah, that's harsh. Yeah.
That's something. That's what something happens on X sometimes, where somebody compliments you, but then they also insult like somebody that you work with at the same time.
Yeah,
and it's really hard to respond to something like that.
Yeah,
you can't really say, "Well, thank you. I value your opinion. Obviously you have good judgment in these matters."
It happens to me 10 times a day, and I'm still able to not
your
retweet
DMs. I know. You had to hire a personal assistant to handle all those DMs you're getting.
Do you want me to read my reply to this person?
Yeah,
I said, "Enjoy it while I'm out. As long as you're listening, that's what matters. Thanks, man." Signed, Sean.
Taking the high road.
Just taking the high
road.
He or she didn't take the high road.
Try not to embarrass Houston or 610 by drunkenly insulting other teams' fans while you're gone. Don't worry, I'm in Jamaica for this vacation. It's okay.
Don't get too drunk and insult any Jamaicans, though, Sean.
No, I won't.
Don't do it off resort, especially.
Yeah.
Okay.
Don't worry. Not
do it on resort all you want. That's what you pay for.
Right.
But don't go off resort and start talking about, "Hey, this city's just this whole country sucks."
That's what
don't
I'm told. I'm told stay on the resort.
This is the worst vacation resort country I've ever been in.
Ever. Yeah. I've been one other time. I went for a wedding in 2011. Did not leave the resort that time either. So,
How many days are you at the resort?
We're going for 6 days, 5 nights. We leave.
That's an endurance. An all-inclusive.
It's all-inclusive.
I think usually around after like 3 days or so, you might start getting the feeling like we should go. Let's go take a scuba diving trip.
I won't scuba dive. I won't do that. I won't do anything that involves going deep down into the water. But Amy and I kind of talk like, maybe we'll go jet skiing or something like that. Like by the middle of the vacation, something like that. But I appreciate your concern, listener, about not embarrassing Houston or 610. So much to the contrary, I think what you're referring to are the videos that I did in the bleachers at the Target Field in Minnesota. I don't think I embarrassed anybody up there. Houston was behind me 100% because I was sticking up for Jose freaking Altuve, all right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You were defending the honor of the city of Houston.
Thank
and
you.
Jose Altuve.
Yes, yes.
Whether you're drunk or not makes no difference.
Jamaican weighing in on the text page. Sean is a Jamaican. I'll tell you, like everyone else, all caps, stay on the resort. I know. I've been. I'm good. Yeah, thank you.
I had a couple friends once that went and they went on a moped tour. And I don't want to say what country it was in, but I'm pretty sure it was Jamaica. And they got off into some remote village.
Dude.
And the guide said, "Oh, by the way, no, it's $50 more expensive than I told you it was." They're like sitting on their moped with a gas tank on a quarter.
Yeah.
Like in the middle of this dusty little crossroads. I guess it's $50 more expensive than we thought it was.
Yes.
This is back before we had GPS on our phones, kids. Yeah.
That's scary.
Did you use the stars to navigate?
Right. Back in the day. Yeah. The North Star. All right. Payne and Pendergast with you. Astros ruin the Phillies. Can they ruin the Cubs similarly? They ruin the Phillies. We've got the proof of it from morning radio in Philadelphia. If you missed this earlier, you won't want to miss it. We've got that for you coming up next.
Live from the Mokarem Injury Lawyers Studios, Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
Hey, we'll get to the Astros ruining the city of Philadelphia in a second. This, I had zero interest before this in the Utah Jazz or Ace Bailey. I barely knew who Ace Bailey was until the draft process. He played at Rutgers, by God. But he's the kid that got drafted 5th overall by the Utah Jazz on Wednesday night. He's also
not happy about it because he was trying to drive his way down to where was he trying to get to?
He was trying to get to Washington, New Orleans, or Brooklyn. And he didn't work out for anybody. Like his inner circle was really trying to manipulate the draft process. He didn't care if it meant getting paid less with your slot. You get several hundred thousand dollars less each slot that you go down. He just wanted to be on those teams, not Utah. He gets drafted by Utah. Looks like he got drafted to go to, I don't know, Siberia. And now, according to ESPN, I'm looking at a tweet, Brian Windhorst talking on a video. Dylan Harper's co-star at Rutgers, Ace Bailey, told certain teams not to draft him. The Utah Jazz did it anyways. He ghosted their draft night plans and still has not reported to the team. Here's what's interesting about that is that Utah traded up later in the first round to get Walter Clayton Jr., who was the point guard on that Florida team that made the Final Four, made all those clutch shots in the Final Four. He was amazing. He got on a plane and went to Utah to do all the press conferences and everything. Ace Bailey did not get on that plane.
Yeah. I'm torn here because there's a part of me, there's the idealist in me, but then also the pragmatic side of me. Yeah. I reflected on a lot after Shedeur Sanders was that I'm cool with rookies trying to force the hand of organizations because rookies are in a position where they have zero say in where they're going. Hey, you do a great job in college, put yourself out there in any other industry. If you've established yourself as a guy that a lot of companies want to work for you get to make your decision.
Yeah.
So I kind of like guys that try to buck the system, but you also got to have some awareness about it. Yeah. And there's only an understand and recognize what you can and can't do. It seems like Shedeur Sanders really botched that part of
yes.
it that and maybe overestimated his own ability, whatever it might be. So I watched this. I don't know as much about Ace Bailey, but I know Danny Ainge, and I think Danny Ainge. This could turn into quite a showdown.
Oh yeah,
I could totally see Danny Ainge being like. Remember, Danny Ainge had like 29 draft picks that he just sat on for a decade
for years.
There in Boston. Yeah,
for years.
I could totally see Danny Ainge being like, he'll show up and play when he plays.
Yeah,
you know. Oh no, because usually what happens is teams start feeling antsy because but that service time. That guy's rights and everything, they don't start ticking until he actually signs the deal.
Well,
Danny Ainge could sit on this forever and just let it fester.
And Utah ain't winning anything this year anyways. You know, if anything...
Yeah, he might be like, good. I hope it takes a year
get
to
another top
this.
Five pick. Yeah. Pick somebody next year who doesn't want to come to Utah. So anyway, something to keep an eye on as the days and months roll on here towards the NBA season. The Astros... They beat the Phillies 3-game sweep, 1-0, 2-0, 2-1 were the final scores of the games. They locked up the Phillies. It took till the eighth inning of the third game for the Phillies to scrape a run together. It ended up being a sacrifice fly, drives a run home, tie yesterday's game at 1. The very next inning, Cam Smith hits the RBI single to get the win. See if this sounds familiar. This is WIP's morning show. Joe DiCamera and Jody Mack in for Joe's co-host, John Ritchie. The two of them are chopping it up about this series that the Phillies just got swept by the Astros. And see if this sounds at all familiar to you. They're lamenting about the lack of offense for their team.
And when you measure this offense against either other offenses in baseball or through the years in baseball history, including, by the way, like 80 Phillies, 08 Phils, 07 Phils, et cetera, I mean, guys, we're smart enough to know this offense... Jody, for a true World Series contending team, this offense at a very basic level just does not have. Now, I want to be careful here to say enough because theoretically they can still win the World Series, but I'll frame it this way. The offense itself does not have enough players that you feel you can count on, period. Who can you count on, Jody?
There's an imbalance to this roster.
Is it
zero?
You are
100% right.
Who can you count on?
Count on.
Yeah, is it zero?
It all depends on how you define.
No, counting. What is it? It's zero, right? Right now, there's zero players. Seltzer, what's the number? Zero?
I mean, like Schwarber.
One? Schwarber?
Yeah, I think Schwarber. And look, this season, Turner, you have been able to count on him for the most part. But I get it. Like, come the playoffs, I don't think anyone's going to definitely count on him. But I do think this season, Schwarber and Turner, you can say you can count on those two guys.
I mean, that's for most of that cut. That was you and me the first 3 weeks of the Astros season.
Yeah.
Except they didn't call their team boring like we did with the Astros.
No, and we, you know, that we could still very much be, we could still very much be talking about them like that if they weren't winning games.
Yes.
I mean, they're right now, let me see, where are they? It's so weird having to scroll this far down. They're 19th in runs scored so far.
Yeah, I mean, they're not
that. Only a couple teams have 82 games instead of 81. They're a bottom half of the league offense.
Yeah.
And they have been. I guess the difference is that they're not underperforming on paper as much as maybe the Phillies are did as of late. Schwarber, like, I feel like that might be a little based on Schwarber's scary, man.
Yeah.
Like if you throw him a strike, he's gonna hit it.
Launching
like that's yeah. So I feel like Schwarber's having a good year, and they're maybe a little too caught up in the moment of having watched the team score one run over the course of three games. But Schwarber, if I were a Philly fan, I think I'd still trust Schwarber.
Well, I mean, we can't ignore the fact Bryce Harper's hurt right now, too. I mean, yeah, he's one of the best players in baseball. So whatever version of the Phillies is going to go into the postseason is, I'm assuming, going to have Bryce Harper there as well. So that improves things. That's a Yordan effect. I mean, he's one of those guys that not just is a great hitter, but he affects the guys that bat in front of him and behind him, too, in terms of pitches that they see and things like that.
Yeah, the Phillies are 11th in runs scored, and somehow we're the city that's not wringing our hands about the lack of offense. Part of that, you're exactly right. I mean, the return of Yordan makes you feel better about it. Mm-hmm. It's not going to be a panacea for everything,
right?
But it's the fact that the pitching has been so good that it feels like, all right, man, if they can just tweak the offense and get more juice out of the offense and Christian Walker and a few guys, then at least you're respectable and a well-rounded team.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, Christian, think about that. Like, this is where we talk about Joe Espada and the little moves that he's making. Joe Espada finally moving Christian Walker down to sixth and Cam Smith up to fifth in the order won the game for them yesterday. You know, if it's Christian Walker that comes up with runners on base in the eighth inning, the inning's over. You know how I know that? Because Christian Walker got out and popped up in foul territory the next at-bat after Cam Smith. If Cam Smith's batting sixth and Christian Walker's batting fifth, Cam Smith is leading off the bottom of the ninth, presumably, you know, assuming Abreu holds the Phillies to no runs in the top of the ninth. Cam Smith's leading off a tie game in the bottom of the ninth. Instead, you make little tweaks like that. Deservedly so. Cam Smith is a better hitter than Christian Walker. To me, it took almost too long to make that move, but he finally did. That won the game for them yesterday.
If Christian Walker never raises up out of the 600s with his OPS this year, and, you know, he's a guy that's been an 800-plus OPS guy before he got to Houston.
Yep.
Do we have to seriously start considering whether there might be a Yuli Gurriel curse at first base for the Astros?
So we've had
if Jose Abreu turned into absolute dust immediately.
Yep.
He aged a decade in a year. And if Christian Walker is the worst version of himself, is this all because they didn't do what I demanded they do, which is find a way to keep Yuli Gurriel in there? Elevate him to vice president of something.
I
know he still wants to play baseball.
Yeah.
Money whip him until he decides, oh, I'm going to be the Astros vice president of Cuban-American baseball scouting or something. I don't know.
Something.
Yeah.
I think as a show, Seth, so you're asking, do we think that there's a hex on first base? Do we, Payne and Pendergast, think there's a hex? I would say as a show that openly embraces hexing other teams and that kind of black magic, then yes, there's absolutely a curse on first base.
We got to go about, I feel like there's something we can do about this. We could send gifts to Yuli or something.
Something, yeah.
Crowdfunded.
Yeah.
Crowdfunded.
Yeah, yeah.
Yes.
Go fund me. We'll put it up after the show.
Okay, yeah, let's think about this. I'll brainstorm this. This is what I'm going to work on the entire week you're gone.
Okay.
What gift we could get to Yuli Gurriel that might somehow. Now, I'm not saying that Yuli imposed the
curse.
The curse. I'm guessing it was one of the Castros.
Right.
But, how exactly do we rid ourselves of this curse?
Yeah.
This Yuli Gurriel curse at first base.
So you're going to think of some sort of some gift that we can give to him where he can lift the hex that is on first base right now.
Yeah.
We need that, man. I mean, this team, I'm kidding aside, they're going to need Christian Walker at some point to hit better than a 623 OPS or whatever. They're going to need him to stop striking out so much. Like, at least while you're up there and you got guys on base, make some contact so the thing keeps moving. It's just, he strikes out so much. It's crazy. It's crazy. Good news, Seth, is that there's several people who've weighed in on the text page who actually enjoy having me on the show to balance out that one guy who is really happy I'm going on vacation.
No, that's always it's one of the hazards of this business is you're going to have every single co-host I've worked with, too. There's some people that like me more than the other guy and vice versa. We're not striving to have a perfect 50-50 split of adoration.
If you got everybody's agreeing on everything, then something wrong is going on. You know,
it seemed like the weirdest dynamic I noticed was the people that really, really have hated me and tried to get me fired over the years will consistently say, I can't believe that this guy is so much unlike Rich Lord. And they'll point to Rich Lord as the kind of guy that, who retired, by the way, that should be here because Seth is completely the opposite of him.
Right.
And I like Rich Lord a lot, but I don't know. I don't see how Rich Lord and I are all that much different. Why would people who love Rich Lord hate Seth Payne?
I mean, Rich didn't get as animated as you get.
You've got
big energy.
That's true.
You know what I mean? Like that's
probably people that kind of like something a little bit more there. That makes total sense.
Right. Like, yeah. I think this is how I can sum it up. Don't take this the wrong way. I have a lot of people that come up to me to talk about the show, and they say this lovingly. I want to be clear.
Yeah.
How do you control Seth Payne?
Oh.
They ask me that. Like, how do you control Seth? Because you've got that big energy. It's a good thing. Nobody in my 5.5 years of doing a show with Rich Lord, nobody came up and said, how do you control Rich Lord?
That makes sense. Okay.
Right?
Obviously, when I first got into radio, I took everything personally. Yeah. But now I just look at it pretty academically. If somebody doesn't like me, I'm kind of like, let me figure out why they don't like me. And, okay, that makes sense. I get that.
Yeah.
I get why somebody might rub them the wrong way.
Yes.
It took a lot of time, but I can get to the point where I can just dispassionately be like, oh, yeah, I am an a-hole
in that respect. I've been with this guy on the text. He replied and said, well, don't get drunk and embarrass 610 and Houston. And I said, ha, 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 I won't. Yeah. I'm going to Jamaica. We just read your text. That was really funny, Sean. Right? Mm-hmm. You know, you roll with the punches is what you do.
Well, that's a guy that just clearly doesn't, he doesn't approve of your chosen recreational activity.
That's
which
right.
Which is getting drunk every single day.
Yeah. Not every single day. I mean, not all of them.
Every other day.
Not all of them. Okay. You're getting warmer.
Okay.
I've actually been very, very good lately. I've kept it confined to the weekends lately. What are the odds Sean made up that text just to get people to tell him how much we like it?
Good. I'm
more insulted by that than I am the guy telling me he hates
me. The old straw man
is
at work.
I'm like, that's something nefarious right there. You hear those voices. It's John Lopez and Reggie Atatula. Gentlemen, how we feeling? How we doing?
Terrific. Yeah? Wait till they hear that I'm going on vacation next week.
Next week also?
Yeah,
oh,
yeah.
You're for sure going to get some of those texts. Yeah. People hate you. I'm kidding, John. I'm kidding. You know I love you.
You know what? I always
and you know I don't care.
I always tell guest hosts to, try not to look at the text line too much just because people always hate the guest host if their favorite guy is gone or whatever. But then I realized that, but there are people who text in and say, oh, I love you. I wish you would replace the other guy.
Yeah.
And I'm just realizing, I wonder how many guest hosts thought that I was like just doing that self-servingly. Yeah. Like, I don't want this guy to see how much people actually like him.
Yeah. I like when the guest host comes in and this should be the show, not Lopez.
When the guest host says that. Oh, wow. Yeah.
Maybe. Maybe.
Someday. I want the show to sound good while I'm gone, man. I'm measured on these same numbers even if I'm here or away.
Don't get your hopes up. I'm on vacation all next week, just in my mind.
Yeah. Up here? I'm already gone. Yeah. That's crazy.
I'll be sitting in front of a microphone, but my mind will be in Puerto Viagra. Puerto Viagra.
What's the question of the day, fellas?
Well, happy Screwed Day. Isn't that it?
Yeah, DJ. June 27th, baby.
Oh,
it's a Houston holiday of sorts.
Yeah.
And because of it, like, it's no, outside of Houston, maybe there's a few folks that really rock with the Screwed Up Click and, Chop the Screwed.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, it would just be a Friday mm-hmm. the 27th. Mm-hmm. But here, for a certain group of people, it's a holiday. And so mm-hmm. that got me thinking, what do you celebrate like it's a bona fide, real holiday, even if it's not?
October 15th, 1988.
Wow, that's very specific.
Catholics versus convicts.
Hey! Yeah. You and me were both there.
We were both there, yeah. Mm-hmm. We were both there. You were a young scribe at the time.
I was a very young scribe.
I was a drunk sophomore at the game. That's where it all started. So October 15th, 19th, I feel like it's one of those things, like it's a date. Mm-hmm. The date pops. You don't need to be reminded of it,
So that's it for me. This obviously doesn't qualify because I can't remember the exact date, but it gets brought up every single year, which was the date of the DeAndre Hopkins trade. That's not a celebration necessarily, but it's a time to reflect quietly at home. You tell your children about it, Just like a lot of these holidays, you sit your children down and say, hey, this is why this is important and why it can never happen again.
It's not the 4th of July. It's Memorial Day. I feel you. I got it.
Yeah,
I think it was... Seth, I want to say it was March 15th because it was right as the world was shutting down.
It was the day before. It was the day before everything really just.
Well, that was March 11th, I believe.
Yeah. Okay. I had just gotten back from our honeymoon. March 11th was the Rudy Gobert day.
Yeah.
But Seth and I did that show in studio. Okay, I remember that we were in studio that day. Because I remember going home right after the show and standing at my kitchen counter watching all of Schefter's tweets pop up about the trade. Yeah, so I want to say it was sometime in the middle of March.
Is today the day that DJ Screw died, or was it some other event in his life?
No, so there's a big the June 27th freestyle, which I believe was Big Demo's birthday.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know,
I looked it up.
That day became okay. You did?
Yeah, I did.
Excellent, excellent. Yeah. So you can confirm that I was correct in saying that?
No, no, I knew it was DJ Screw Day or Screw Day, whatever you want to call it, but I didn't know why.
Gotcha.
Oh, so there you go.
You informed yourself. Yeah. So my personal celebration is making sure that I listen to the entirety, all 35 minutes of June 27th.
So what are your holidays, Seth?
And this one's saying that also that he recorded Screwed Up. Wait, what did he do? He recorded a freestyle on this date in 1996.
Mm-hmm.
What's that, John?
What's the day that you celebrate like a holiday?
DeAndre Hopkins.
He just said he was talking about DeAndre Hopkins trade. He celebrates it to educate others to not do things like that.
Yeah, as Reginald said, it's like a Memorial Day for me.
Yeah, there you go.
You remember, you're like, okay, is it happy DeAndre Hopkins trade day? No. It's we observe it's DeAndre Hopkins trade day to just
reflect.
Think about some of the things that have happened in the past and how do you avoid it.
Remember the things that we've lost.
Yeah, absolutely.
DeAndre. March 16th, 2020. Is the date of this NFL.com article. Stunner! Texans trade DeAndre Hopkins to Cardinals.
Dang. To say the least.
Dang. March 16th. I think that was the last day we were in studio for a long, long time. I think we shut the studios down the next day.
What should I had that thought on the last Memorial Day because I caught myself saying Happy Memorial Day. What should you say instead of Happy
that's
Memorial
awkward.
Day?
That is tough.
Yeah, that's awkward.
I think in theory, you still want people to have a happy day, even though it's a somber day of remembrance. Mm-hmm. So I'd probably still go with happy and then just kind of work out the feelings myself.
Yeah. I would just say, hope you have a good memorial.
There you go.
There it is.
There you go.
That's it.
This doesn't help me out at all. Rather than say happy Memorial Day, you can say, we remember and honor those who made the ultimate sacrifice.
You should do that.
Their courage and dedication.
You should
never
walk around society saying that to everybody you walk up to.
Yes.
That won't be annoying. You'll be the first person to annoy people about Memorial Day.
Admonishing little old ladies at the grocery store. Yeah.
Here comes multi-sentence wisher again. All right. Well, fellas, Seth. Antibodies, and I'll see you on July 6th.
Antibodies and checkout, man.
Don't forget
this world even exists. I'll fill you in on everything that happened while you're gone.
I just have to finish this list of 30 things that I've got on this piece of paper, and I'm gone. Mm-hmm. A lot of things, Reggie. Reggie's squinting to see
I was like, I'm interested. Is this a honeydew list, or is this something else entirely?
It's a Shawnee-do list.
Very
is
good.
What it is, yeah.
Yes. All right. DeAndre Hopkins' sacrifice never be forgotten, nor his courage and dedication, which we will always remember.
I love that it's that version of a holiday. All right, we're done. We're out of time. Can I remind, before I leave, I want to remind everybody that Crosstalk is brought to you by DNM Auto Leasing. Reggie Atatulu, good teammate. Crosstalk brought to you by DNM Auto Leasing. We're done. We're out of time.